to another exciting edition of the Thought Police. I'm Mike Graham, and you are
Kevin O'Sullivan.
And we're gazing out on another beautiful summer's day. Not despite the fact that apparently it's the hottest spring that we've ever had.
Fucking hell!
Hello,
fucking hell! Right. Well, this is folks. This is a Thursday tonight. I'm doing my show. I'm getting a fucking guest on.
Yeah.
Because the Met Office, I'm saying this fucking point blank, are lying to us.
Yes.
They've just issued an official statement saying that May, it's the warmest May and spring ever. All over the country, it never stopped fucking raining.
Yeah.
All over the country, millions of people had their heatings on, including me.
Right.
This just is not fucking true.
It's bullshit.
This is scaremongering and catastrophizing to get us to all sign up to the bollocks climate change emergency.
Yeah, of course. We'll talk about electric cars later on, which has become another fucking absolute, that's a fallacy.
Yeah, that's a lot of old crap.
We're also recording this on D-Day,
yeah.
80th anniversary of D-Day. It was an amazing fucking day. But the highlight of it today for me, of course, was all of the veterans going over and you know,
yeah,
people recounting tales of what it was like. Because when I was doing my show, I think it was on Wednesday morning, I was talking to a guy who said, you know, do you know, at this time, 80 years ago, there were people sort of crouched all over Britain, waiting to get onto boats. They didn't know where they were really going.
Where they're going.
They didn't know exactly when they were going to
get
off.
What they were doing.
Didn't know what they were going to do. Didn't know that they were going to literally walk off onto a barrage of fucking machine gun fire. Incredible stuff, right? But how about this? Here's a story that we did today. A bunch of paras decided that they were going to do, as they always do on the anniversary
the
of
passport.
D-Day. Right? And they got off. They parachuted into Normandy behind enemy lines. This was not Operation Overlord. This was Operation Tango or something like that, right? But as soon as they got down on the ground, and there's video of it, they're walking towards wherever it is they're going, and there's suddenly a little fucking makeshift table and chairs. There's two fucking French wankers sitting there asking them for their passports and giving a fucking stamp in the passport.
Well,
hello?
But you see, that's the French don't get enough credit, or lack of credit, if you like, for that. I don't know if you've been to India, haven't you? Indians, the country of India, they absolutely fucking love bureaucracy.
Yeah, they do.
You know, you've got to fill out a form to buy a fucking train ticket in India. It's the same in France.
Yeah.
The French love bureaucracy. They're little clerks with their little hats on and their pens and their clipboards.
Mm.
So this is typical of France. That said, I want to say thank you to France, because those coastal towns on the Normandy beaches, you know, while our fucking cities are full of bloody free Palestine flags, all of the French northern towns on the Normandy beach, full of Union Jacks, that they respect us, and they said, and they wanted to say thank you to the soldiers.
Yeah.
But to go back to what you were saying, the worst thing about it, right, they get on these amphibious crafts, these poor kids, that's all they were.
The youngest was 16 who died,
they were,
right?
Some of them were lying to get into the...
Amazing.
But, you know, if you were 22, one of those, so you were fucking old.
Right.
They were teenagers, basically.
Right.
Almost certain to lay down their lives for their country. Right. 22,000 people died in that landing. So you think the horror of it. You get off this fucking amphibious craft, and you come into literally a wall of bullets. Mm. You're seeing all your friends getting cut down.
Yeah.
Your chances of survival are zero. But I know that this isn't quite as bad, but the worst thing that I heard about it, or a really terrible thing, is these amphibious crafts, they bob around like fucking mad.
Mm.
So all of these soldiers, before they were finally told that they had to wait off the coast for a long time.
And they were doing it in darkness,
hour and
as
a half,
well,
kind of thing. Yeah.
Right.
Until it got light, because that was 7:30 in the morning they went. They all of them, to a man, were being violently, violently sick because of acute seasickness.
Yeah.
This they did for an hour and a fucking half. And then, so they were all feeling so fucking ill.
Right.
And then it was, door goes down, off you go to your certain death.
Right.
Those fucking guys, heroes.
Incredible.
Heroes.
Absolutely incredible. And I mean, one of the interesting things which I learned only this week of doing it was the Americans' casualties were a lot worse, because they actually got the timing wrong on the tides, because their tides were coming in faster than they thought, or going out faster, I can't remember which one. But they weren't able to get off the landing craft as quickly as they should have done. So they were just all fucking massacred. And who could forget? I mean, I think I said this week. I took my kids to Normandy last year Easter, because it's such an amazing part of the world, and it's really touching. I think when you go around those cemeteries and you go around, you know, and just look at the beaches as they are now, because they're exactly the same.
Yeah,
they're not different. And it's fucking unbelievable. What I'm saying is this as well this week. You know, these kids nowadays who are kind of the Gen Xers who don't really know much about D-Day, and they're very worried about the fucking phones that they've got. They don't want to answer their phone because they're a bit anxious. It's like, how the fuck would you feel about going on a mission like that tomorrow? You know, they couldn't do it, could they?
Yeah, I think they could. I've had a little side story to go off on a tangent. I went to Venice, you know, Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, yeah.
It came out in 1990.
What a great film, by the way.
So I went to Venice to interview Tom Hanks about it, who of course starred in it. And sat down with him, and kicked off with... I'd seen it the night before, right. Mesmerising. First half an hour, fucking hell.
I mean, I could still just watch the first
half
an hour.
That was as good, as good a first half an hour as there ever has been in any film.
Yeah.
And I used to be a film critic, so I've seen a lot of films. Anyway, I said to Tom Hanks, I said, so you happy with the film? He goes, happy? Happy? He said, it's the best fucking film I've ever seen.
Right.
So that's just a side story, but...
he seems a decent guy.
Tom Hanks, what you see is what you get. That happy, snappy, always smiley guy.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of Hollywood stars aren't what their persona says they are. But
Should we not talk about Alec Baldwin?
But he's a very nice guy, Tom Hanks. Yeah. Genuine guy. But the heroism of those people. I was on air last night, watching some of the ceremony and interviewing Philip Ingram about all this. I got all choked up.
I do.
It's fucking hard to talk about.
It really is, because you can't imagine, especially, and I'm not saying that you don't feel the same way because you haven't got, but when we walked on those beaches, my two sons, 19 and 17, and I said, you'd have been fucking here.
Yeah.
This is where you would have been, except you wouldn't
such
be walking.
A good thing for a dad
you wouldn't be
that.
Walking with me across a nice piece of fucking sand with the dog running in the fucking in the sea. He loved it, by the way. Ziggy loved the fucking beaches. Beaches are so great. Perfect for dogs. Yeah. Right? No pebbles.
The Normandy landing. Ziggy's style.
Ziggy's here. He fucking loved it. But it was really touching. And I don't know how I can describe how I would feel about anyone who doesn't fucking think about it or doesn't know about it. And maybe because of it's being the 80th anniversary, maybe more people will
I have one, of, one of these old veterans saying that as they... When the amphibious craft, so these big trapdoor things go down.
Right.
He said it was only then we realised what we were going into.
Yeah.
He said it was there. He said that all of us basically said, "Well, we're going to die," and that's how we went forward.
Yeah.
He said that they sort of all told each other it's only on the off chance we're going to survive.
Right.
And then the ones who did survive, one of them, by the way, said this morning, said it was the privilege of my life. They still talk about their best friends who died 80 years ago.
Yes.
Very, very few of them numerically survived. Yeah, most of them fucking died. What a fucking thing.
I know.
So the door goes down. At that point, they all knew. They basically all said to each other, "We're going to die."
Mm.
And they did it anyway. Yeah. Amazing.
Incredible. So, in the fucking background of all of that, of course, we're into the, second to third week, I suppose, 4 weeks to go till the fucking general
election. Puts it into perspective, actually.
On July the 4th.
Oh, by the way, one more thing about the Normandy landings and the very, very moving celebrations on both sides of the channel. Yesterday, Portsmouth, all over northern France today. It's actually D-Day today.
Yeah.
So these veterans, very old, but Joe Biden's there, and he's the only guy who's older than the D-Day veterans. He's 120, and they're only 100.
And he can't remember what fucking day it is. Never mind. What day is it, Joe? D-Day. Is it Thursday?
What is this D-Day? The war? What was that?
Did you see the fucking thing, by the way? This week's, image of Joe Biden not knowing what the fuck he was doing, where he was at a press conference. I don't know if you saw
it's getting ridiculous.
And people are now saying, look, we need to fucking investigate the cognitive abilities of this guy. We need to give him some kind of test. Even the former White House doctor, I think, is saying it. And basically, he's standing there. There's another press conference. He's made some kind of statement. And he's just standing, staring at the fucking people who are asking him questions, not answering any questions at all. And then he starts to move, like as if he's walking away. Somebody asks him another question, and he goes, And then just doesn't answer it. And then he walks off to the side, and the guys who are presumably his aides or his fucking advisors sort of pat him on the back and lead him away. It's fucking embarrassing.
Well, you're right. It's reached a crisis point because the Wall Street Journal have got hold of this report, which is from some serious doctors. You're right. One of them is a former White House doctor who said, this president must take cognitive tests.
Yeah.
And these tests must be published.
Right.
Because if he's not up to speed, he can't fucking be the president anymore.
So no chance.
What the Democrats are doing right now, they're trying to protect him from these tests, which will undoubtedly
prove that he's senile. Yeah, of course. But you know why? They're desperately fucking hoping that they can hang on for grim life until something either happens to Donald Trump, whether he falls down and fucking cuts his head or he gets put in jail and somehow that affects everything. Don't think that's going to happen. Because the last thing they fucking want is to have to step Biden down to get fucking Kamala Harris, who actually might be more cognizant than he is, but is fucking thick as shit.
Yeah, she's fucking useless. Right? I mean, yeah, you forget that. I mean, he's a bad...
I mean, she doesn't know where the fucking map of the world is.
Old fucking Ancient Joe's a bad enough ticket, but you had Kamala Harris. I mean, she has been the most obscure vice president in history, mainly because the Democrats didn't want her near anything.
So I mean, even Dan Quayle was more fucking...
Well, Dan Quayle. Dan Quayle was not obscure.
No. Do you remember Doomsbury, the cartoon? They used to depict him as like a speck of dust in the fucking picture. He just wasn't... He was so insignificant. Yeah. But even he had a bigger profile than this fucking woman.
Yeah. As he said about... He hadn't been to Latin America yet, but then again, he doesn't speak Latin.
And remember when he did the spelling in the fucking
potato
school?
Potato and tomato.
With an E. Yeah. Absolute fucking useless.
Anyway, let's go back to the election, shall we?
So back to the election. So the big story this week's got to be reform, hasn't it? Nigel Farage suddenly announces that he's going to fucking run, and everyone is running for the hills, and he has totally fucking put them on the back foot. And fucking, I say good for him.
If you think about it... You think about all the people involved, Starmer, Sunak, all the cabinets.
Yeah.
And I'm sure if you go through every MP, there's one or two charismatic characters. But Nigel Farage has got more charisma than all of them put together. You know, he's a magnetic figure. And when he went to...
Sorry, would you mind moving to room 7?
No.
Set up a
cloakroom
in
here
for you.
No, that's fine.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
No worries. Not a problem. Hang on. We should just stop that there. So, back to Nigel Farage. You were saying...
Yeah, yeah. So if you saw him Clacton on Sea a couple of days ago when he officially launched his campaign to be the MP for that fine city by the sea.
Yes.
A town. I know it well. My parents used to live up the road. Anyway,
it's quite a deprived area, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
They say
it's very it's a working class town, a working class seaside town. Anyway, did you see him standing there? The fucking crowd. I mean, they are hanging off the rooftops.
Well, do you know what I've
noticed? No other politician, including the Prime Minister, will get that.
He wouldn't get that at all. But interestingly enough, what I've also noticed, what he's doing, which is very clever, is he's been very sort of Trumpian about how he uses social media. Because, like, for example, when he put out the, you know, we've got a big emergency announcement on the election coming, and that was a massive fucking warning to everybody on Twitter, and suddenly the world was fucking looking at him. When the debate was on with old Sakir shit-faced useless and Rishi, I'm going to try and be really fucking, you know, aggressive, and everyone's going to see me.
Sakir shit-faced useless.
It was a shit debate.
By the way, talking about
that. But hang on one second. Farage puts out at the beginning of the debate, like 5 minutes in, a picture of somebody fucking painting something and then just watching it dry. He's going, sorry, I found something better to do. Just very clever.
Very good, you know. Very good. Now, talking of Keir Starmer, right, so who won the TV debate? I mean, frankly, who cares?
Right.
Won't change the
time. Nobody did.
But if you want to
I
think if you want to know the answer, it's quite clear it was Rishi Sunak.
He did, yeah.
Who turned on him and said, you're going to put the tax up by... everybody's tax up by 2,000. Did you see Starmer's face?
Yeah.
He literally was nonplussed.
Right.
It was like, oh my God, I haven't rehearsed for this.
But Starmer,
he didn't even fucking respond. He should have said, no, we won.
No, of course. But how bad is a guy like that, who's meant to be the Prime Minister of the country, who can't actually swivel on a story, can't actually have a response which is not already rehearsed?
He's thick.
He can't do it. I don't think he's very bright.
He's thick.
People go, oh, but he's a lawyer. Yeah, but I know plenty of lawyers, as you do, who are not very fucking smart.
Look, this is, I don't want to diss the entire legal profession, but you and I have covered loads of... I've covered court cases, all over this
country. All over the world,
all over the world. But British barristers... I would say 50% of them I've ever seen, struck me as dim as fucking ditchwater. And what they are, this is what Keir Starmer...
And they rehearse their arguments.
Yeah, they're just boring. Yeah. You know, that's what lawyers are. They read a lot of legal shit.
Right.
And they just,
trot out... And they construct an argument and they try to build a case.
Yeah, well, it goes
but
like...
what they can't fucking do is make an argument off the hook.
Well, they don't construct the arguments very well. It's all precedent. They go, I refer, Your Honour, to the case of Jones versus Smith, 1893.
Yeah.
There is a precedent here. They're just plodders, most of them.
And he's definitely a plodder.
Keir Starmer is a plodder.
He's the plodder's plodder.
He's the guy who probably got a good degree because he revised twice as much as everyone else.
Right.
He worked very hard.
His dad was also a toolmaker as well.
Yeah, he made a tool in Keir, didn't he? Yeah, right.
Fucking hell. He always forgets to mention that his dad was also the manager and the owner of the factory.
I don't think he was the boss of about 300 people. I'm not sure he actually owned it. But he was a fucking...
He was at least the manager.
He was a manager. Right. He was the boss of about 300 people. Right. You know,
and when he says, oh, my wife works in the NHS. She's a fucking lawyer.
Yeah.
She works in the NHS as a lawyer. She's not a nurse, right?
Yeah. These sort of well-to-do, privileged politicians battling to be working class
is
one of the saddest spectacles
you have to put up with
in these pathetic election campaigns.
I'm much more relatable. Why are you relatable?
Yeah, but look at it. Tim Montgomery, the guy who founded the Conservative Home, very good commentator on the political scene.
Yeah.
When Nigel Farage slung his hat into the ring, Tim, he tweeted... he said, this is Rishi Sunak's worst nightmare.
And so it is, because even if Rishi Sunak had any chance of narrowing the fucking gap, which doesn't look like he's going to anyway, Farage and Reform put a great big fucking size 10 boot right through the fucking glass window.
I'll probably be wrong, but I'm not buying this that Reform won't get a single seat.
I'm not buying it
I would
have bought it before he got involved, but now he's involved. Now he's involved. They might get four, apparently.
I cannot see Farage not winning Clacton.
I think he's going
to
win.
I know that town. I know those people a bit because my parents used to live in the posher town on the coast called Frinton-on-Sea. But I've been to
Clacton. Where James Max lives.
Where he lives in a fucking great £500 million mansion all on his own, cunt. Very fine man, Jake.
Yeah.
Good company.
He won't like that.
Yeah, he's good company. Somebody told me. Says here. So those people, it is the most Brexiteer town in Britain. It's the most Brexiteer constituency in Britain. Last time, they've got cars, exactly. They had a UKIP MP for two terms. The Reform did a deal with the Tories.
Yeah, last time around.
This time they're not going to do a deal with the Tories. And the people of Clacton, like the people of this country, what they know is these fucking Tories, these technocrat left-wing conservatives have let them down.
Yeah.
They fucked up Brexit. Fucking Rishi Sunak, when he fucking called that election in panic to try and fuck Farage up. How did that go for you, Rishi?
Yeah, it hasn't gone well.
It hasn't gone well, really.
Yeah.
When he called that election, he had four bills that were ready to go into statute, all lined up.
Mm.
It was the Renters Reform Bill, which would ban landlords from evicting their tenants.
Right.
That's a socialist bill. It was the Reduced Prison Sentence bill, another socialist bill.
Tough on crime?
It was the Football Governance Bill, which is all about nanny state governing of the Premier League. And finally, of course, the fucking nanny state smoking ban. Every single one of those bills that fucking Prime Minister, the Conservative Prime Minister, were going to put through Parliament and would have gone through it, were left wing.
Yes.
Why the fuck was he doing this? Why the fuck is he doing
and
socialist?
Who was telling him, and who was telling him to do it? The people on the backbench of the Tory party who hate the right wing so much. Yeah. They shouldn't even be in the fucking Tory party. Most of them are going to lose their seats anyway.
Yeah.
But it's also been very interesting watching the way that these fucking Tories have been scrambling around trying to get a safe seat and parachuting people into various places where even the local fucking Conservative Association are going, fuck off. We're not going to even
They're trying to get
that.
Richard Holden into Basildon.
Well, Richard Holden is one of those places in Basildon that Reform could stand somebody and go, you know what?
Basildon would do well.
You know, they would do well there. Essex Man and all that, you know, of course they fucking would. Yeah.
But this Conservative government, 14 years, fucking Cameron set the ball rolling. He was the first one.
Yeah.
All of them have been sort of left wing.
Yeah.
You know, fucking.
Oh, yeah, it's Cameron. Like Hugger, from Hugger Hoodie to let's save the environment.
Yeah,
and fucking.
Yeah, and fucking.
Let's go, you know, fuck off.
Fucking Theresa May battling like mad to stop Brexit.
Right.
Fucking Boris, fucking green lunatic.
Yeah.
Fucking solar energy and all piss off. You can't go, green energy is so much cheaper. It's not so much as I've fucking noticed, Boris.
No, it's not.
Could I have to, when I have to spend at least 500 quid a month more on my energy
bills?
Well,
the only reason it's cheaper to people who fucking bring it into this fucking country is because they get subsidised by the taxpayer.
But it's not cheaper. We have to pay levies. Why do they keep saying this? It costs everyone hundreds of pounds more, a lot of people, thousands of pounds more a year in green levies. Why do these fucking politicians keep telling us it's cheaper? It's fucking not.
Because I think they keep saying things like that on the basis that if they keep saying it often enough, somebody will believe them. The same thing about electric cars. We got that story this week, that the second-hand value of electric cars is fucking plummeting. Because nobody wants one. People are working out, actually, you know, it might have been a nice idea at the time to get a nice new, brand new fucking Tesla or something like that. But once the battery starts to wear down, they don't know what's going to fucking happen. They don't know whether it's going to burst into flames. They don't know whether they're not going to be able to get insurance. They don't know whether it's going to be worth a fag end or if they're going to have to buy a new fucking battery for about 20,000 quid. So nobody now wants an electric car apart from the fuckwitted virtue signalling wankers who want a new one.
Yeah.
But you can't buy a second-hand one because it's not worth anything.
You go back to this green shit. These fucking politicians, when did they decide this?
Mm.
That we're all obsessed with greenery.
It's a planet emergency.
Fuck off!
No.
Fuck off!
It's a climate emergency.
So, you know, this is Sunak's battle lines.
Yeah,
you know, Keir Starmer wants to be sort of totally green.
Mm.
Greener, fairer future.
But now he can't afford
it. Why don't you stick your greener, fairer future where the fucking sun don't shine up your ass, God.
Yeah, exactly.
Starmer, right. You cunt.
Also, anyway, he keeps telling us about this great British energy company.
Yeah.
Nobody knows what the fuck it is.
That is nonsense. Is we'll talk about Rishi in a minute. Right. What the GB Energy Company is, this is what Keir Starmer says will provide this country with energy security,
right.
Break our addiction to Russian fuel and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And what it is, it's green energy. Now, green energy is created by windmills and solar panels, right? Now, that is not secure. Right. That is why when you have fucking windmills and solar panels, as backup, you have to have fossil fuel power stations.
Yeah.
Because guess what? In Britain, I don't know if you've noticed, it's not always sunny.
No.
And quite often it's not windy.
No.
So that energy security is traditional power stations backing up renewables.
Yeah.
So when he says, we're going to give you this company that is going to be energy security because it's green, that is incoherent nonsense.
Yeah.
Absolute nonsense. Meanwhile, Rishi Sunak goes, oh, yeah, well, you know, Labour, they really want to go all green, but our approach is, you know, we're still going to get to net zero, but we're going to make it far more affordable, less tax the people. It's like, no, Rishi, if you want to win the fucking election, here's
forget about net zero.
Yeah, just say, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to fuck net zero up its confusing ass and get rid of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Just get rid of
it. Like you say, nobody really asked for it. And also, and I always say this, probably till I'm blue in the fucking face, I'll probably die saying it. Nobody can tell you what net zero will bring. What benefit will it bring? What difference will it make to our fucking planet?
Right.
What difference will it make to our lives? When we achieve, if we achieve net zero, how will my life and your life be different? Like, nobody can answer that question.
It's a kind of a vanishing point, right. You know, that you're going down this road and you're going to reach this target in 2050. Thank you very much, Theresa May, for binding this country legally to that target.
Yeah.
You fucked it, you stupid woman. What a ridiculous woman.
I know. Absolutely
useless, useless. Well, she's the one who ruined the Tories
by
saying, we mustn't be the nasty party. Yeah. And that's why all of those backbenchers, those centrist, wet Tories, they think that the way to be successful is to be like Labour.
Yeah.
That's why they're going to lose the election, because they've spent, and Rishi, they've spent so much time trying to be like Labour Lite. Yeah. It's pathetic.
It is pathetic, and it's going to be fucking horrendous as well, because when Labour Lite does get in, it won't be Labour Lite anymore, it'll be fucking Labour Heavy. And that's when they're going to start doing all the sort of shit that nobody wants them to do, like property taxes, fucking taxing your ISAs, taxing your fucking savings. If you've got anything, you know, the fucking dreadful Labour Party will basically say, well, you know, you're privileged, we're coming for you, because we're going to take the money from you and give it to some people who don't fucking earn anything because they're too fucking lazy to get off their arse.
That's fucking right.
But, you know, here's another one. Talking about electric cars, I was having a row with people today. Because, you know, I was saying, how is it possible that you can go on and on and on about fossil fuels, right? Saying that, oh, it's very dangerous for the planet to take things out of the ground, like, you know, oil, like gas. Well, how is it not dangerous to take lithium out of the fucking ground? How is it not dangerous to take fucking cobalt out of the fucking ground using 10-year-old, you know, young African slaves?
Poor little kids who have to mine it. Yeah.
But, you know, and of course they said, oh, but it's not a fossil fuel because it was created during the Big Bang. I don't give a fuck when it was created. You're still digging it out of the fucking ground in the same way that you're drilling for fucking oil.
Well,
how is it any different?
But it's, you know, there's another thing, you know. Why aren't we fracking? Mm. You know, fucking sooner we would frack. So we don't frack so that Blackpool doesn't have an earthquake.
Blackpool would be approved by a fucking earthquake.
Blackpool will not have an earthquake. That's a load of old shite. We're so interested in the environment, we're not going to frack. It's wrong. What do? We import loads and loads of fracked gas and oil
from
fucking America.
Yeah, I know.
It's ridiculous. We've got windmills and solar panels. Who makes the solar panels and the windmills? The Chinese, who spew out 28% of the world's pollution, who've got 1,100 coal fuel power stations and are building
and
300
counting.
More. Why the fuck are we bothering at all? Mm. The Chinese do the square root of fuck all about it, nor do the Russians, nor the Americans. You know, why are we supposed to live like Stone Age men when it won't make a blind bit of fucking difference, because all we do is churn out about 1% of
because
the world.
Because we're all fucking cunts, that's why.
Well, because our politicians are cunts.
Yeah, exactly.
Who really think it's worth punishing the people just so they can virtue signal about the environment. You fucking shower of pricks.
Right, now I've got to play you something here, because you might remember this. Last week, right?
Oh!
Last week, we did a fucking podcast in the pub, the first one we'd done for ages. You failed to tell me that you were fucking going to a show that night, not with James Max, I know you didn't go with him, but at the Albert Hall, this band called
Air,
right? And I listened to it at the weekend and I thought, this is very druggy fucking music, man. You know, but it's, I mean, you said it was astounding and fucking.
It was one of the best concerts I've ever seen.
But I fucking switched the TV on because I tend to at about 7:15. And I thought, why is Russell Quirk doing a fucking handover with whoever it was, I think it was Peter Cardwell? And I genuinely thought something happened to you. So I sent out a message to fucking, you know, Ricky, our boss, and I said, what's fucking happened to Kevin? He didn't know that I didn't know you weren't on the air.
Yeah.
So he thought something happened to you as well. So this whole fucking thing was begun. And everyone thought, fuck me, something's happened to Kevin. But anyway,
it was a great concert. Check it out.
Why do you know these people?
Anybody, you want to hear a great track, including you, Mike. Put La Femme d'Argent.
Yeah, no, I've already got some of it on my Spotify.
It's good stuff.
It's a bit hippy dippy trippy.
Yeah, well, they're French. They were great. It was a fucking amazing concert. Sorry I didn't tell you about it.
No, I was just. I mean, you didn't have to tell me about it. It just was. I said.
Well, I should have done. I had a fucking drink before you.
I said, hang on. I was with this fucking guy for about an hour.
Yeah.
He didn't bother mentioning he was going out or that he wasn't on the fucking show. But anyway, never mind.
Good show.
Good weekend.
Good show.
Otherwise,
good weekend.
Let's talk about football, because today, breaking news: Jack Grealish has been left out of the England team. Don't know whether you've seen this.
Is he not in the squad?
They've started cutting it down to the.
Yeah,
23.
I saw that.
Maguire,
James Maddison,
Maguire and Grealish are both out of it. Apparently.
Are they?
Yeah.
Well, Maguire, fucking hell, I'm better than Maguire.
Oh, bonehead.
Yeah, he, Maguire.
He did score a couple of goals in the last World Cup, though, didn't he?
Fucking, if Maguire was any slower, it'd be a fucking photograph. Can't, barely moves. He's useless. Grealish is a good player, but I think he doesn't fit into the tactics of an automaton
Gareth Southgate. He wouldn't like him because he's too much of a character, right?
And he's also a brilliant mercurial player.
Yeah,
you know, he likes to dribble and beat players. That's a mistake with Grealish.
I think Grealish is one of those players that, you know, as much as people and the girls love him, right, and maybe some of the boys as well. Point is that, you know, at the end of the day, he's a fucking he's an attraction. And he's also kind of unpredictable.
Brilliant.
He can have shit games, but he can have great games.
But he's also really skillful. Mm. You know, really skillful on the ball. Great dribbler, great beater of players. But Gareth Southgate is the kind of manager who doesn't like people like that.
No.
There's a lot of managers.
They don't like
individualists.
No.
They don't like people because they want, like, rigid tactics, you know.
Well, Alf Ramsey was a bit like that, wasn't he? Because, everybody said, even though he won the World Cup, that he should have been playing Jimmy Greaves a lot more than he ever did.
Yes.
But he didn't like Jimmy Greaves because Jimmy Greaves is a fucking goal hanger and he didn't think that was a team
player.
No,
you're right about that. Yeah.
You know? That's going back a bit.
But it's true that there's lots of these kind of rather dour managers who just don't like players like Jack Grealish, and I think that's a mistake.
Quite a big story, though, so we'll be talking about that. Also, we should finish off, I suppose, with the old royals, because we saw Charles out and about and William out and about. And you know this upcoming wedding with the Duke of Westminster?
The Duke of Grosvenor.
Have you seen the latest?
Hugh Grosvenor.
The Duke of Westminster owns half of fucking Britain, right? Did you see the measly, weasly fucking, not statement, but because they only talk, you know where it's come from, they only talk to People magazine. Fucking Harry and Meghan, you know, the Montecito massive. They put out a story through People magazine that, you know, Harry decided to withdraw because he knew that it
could be... I'm not sure I believe that.
I don't believe it. Fuck, are you joking? I don't believe a fucking word of it.
Yeah.
These fuckers will say anything to try and make out that they've done the good thing. I bet what's happened is the Duke of Westminster looked over at the fucking Prince of Wales, William, and said, "You're the fucking man. You're
the
heir to the throne
as well.
Yeah, you're the heir to the throne, and the king's coming to my fucking wedding. Why would we have that fucking scrote with his very annoying fucking wife who just stands around posing for pictures all the time, looking happy when she clearly isn't?" And at the end of the day, he's gone, "You're not getting a fucking invite, you pair."
That's my understanding. You know that the awkward. I think Hugh Grosvenor is a mate or was a mate of Harry.
Well, lots of it were mates of
Harry. But I read a story some months ago that he said to Harry, "Under the circumstances, do you mind if you don't come?" So I don't think it's true they got invited. But
I agree.
But you know, the crux of the issue is Williams and Usher.
Yes.
So if Harry had turned up, William would have had to show him to his seat.
Right. I'm sure they could have got around that. I just really find it intensely dislikable that this fucking pair of grifters, all they do is try and make out that they're in control of the situation. They're clearly not in control of it.
Okay, right. Netflix, their $100 million contract, that is fucking flatlining.
Netflix.
That is on life support, right? Yeah. Last 6 months.
What about all these new projects she was excited about doing?
Fuck that.
And the fucking
last 6 months, number of views for Harry and Meghan shows on Netflix, 1.9 million, all over the world.
Right.
Last 6 months, number of views for the Beckhams reality show, 49.3 million.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Interest in the gruesome twosome from Montecito is evaporating.
Yeah, it is. Because they don't do anything interesting.
Yeah.
How I'm improving myself.
Well, I keep having Kinsey Schofield, our great royal girl from LA. I keep asking her. I said, what is it now? 3 months since Meghan launched American Riviera Orchard?
Yeah.
Why can't I still fucking buy anything from it? All she's done is sent out 50 fucking pots of jam, pretended she made them herself, my ass.
Right.
And that's it.
Yep.
So you can't buy a fucking
thing.
Also,
do you remember when they went to some fucking parade or fucking award ceremony to pick up yet another humanitarian award in the year. And that she was like, I've got so many projects on the go, I can't wait to get started. And you're going, really? Where are they then?
Well, that, this is the thing about both of them, though, particularly her.
Talk a lot of shit.
It is, she's always launching things or saying, we bought the rights to this film. I'm going to make a cookery series. I've got this lifestyle. He's in a
polo series.
Yeah, yeah. What's to see there? Yeah, great. Nobody gives a fuck about polo.
World's favourite sport.
World's worst sport. It's the world's worst sport.
Yeah.
A bunch of chinless wonders falling off fucking horses.
And have you ever seen polo?
It's shite. I had the misfortune
of going to a fucking game when back in the '80s in America when Fergie was over in Texas, and it was a fucking absolute shit show.
Yeah, I used to have rich Americans who think
they have to pretend to be British. Yeah. Well, it's a big thing in California, New York. They don't really do it, but California and Texas is fucking huge.
It's sunny, but it's big in Argentina, places like that.
Right.
But I used to have to go to a lot when I was a young reporter because you'd go to Cowdery Park, I think it was called, down towards the coast somewhere.
Yeah.
Towards Brighton, I think Cowdery Park, and Charlie. Right. And, William, all the royals used to go, and that was during the days when they were all pulling birds and things like that. So
the polo set.
So, but anyway, so he announces the polo series. What's happening with that? She says, I'm making a cooking series. Yeah. What's happening with that? What's happening with American Riviera Orchard? Yeah. What's happening with the rights to that film, The Lady by the Lake, or whatever it's called? They're always starting things. They're always announcing things, and they never fucking do it.
I've started, so I won't finish.
Yeah,
it's their fucking new mantra.
Yeah,
bunch of cats. Anyway, fuck them. Fuck you lot. Fuck as well. You lot. We'll see you later.
Cheers.